And now we drift back to May 4th, 1997, when episode 4F19, Homer's Enemy, first aired. This is Matt Groening.
This is Josh Weinstein, executive producer, showrunner.
Jim Reardon, the director.
And Hank Azaria.
And Hank, are you there? In New York, Hank.
The wonders of modern technology. I am here in New York, yes.
Hank, telephonically piped in on this commentary.
And now, can't speak. Now, this episode, we have a lot to say. My only last 5 minutes, but this episode is it was certainly in my personal top three favorite episodes. And what we're going to talk about in a little bit is how there's many generations of Simpsons fans. The more recent generation loves this episode, but when it first came out, a lot of people got very angry about it.
On his 18th birthday, he was blown up in a silo explosion. During his long recuperation, he taught himself to hear and feel pain again. As the years passed, he used...
Every year, we wanted to do a few episodes that really push the envelope conceptually. And this is one of them. And the origin of this episode was from Bill Oakley, who for the longest time just had this idea that Homer had an enemy. And that was it. That Homer, some guy at work, really hates Homer and can't stand him. That was it for the longest time. And then we gradually worked it out to be... The big concept of it is, what if a guy seemingly from the real world had to come deal with Homer? And if somebody from the real world had to deal with Homer, he would either love him and think he's the best thing in the world, or he'd be driven totally nuts by him. And being driven totally nuts is funnier, and that's what we decided to do. And also, for this episode, as you've probably noticed over the years, is... When we have a big role for an outsider, it will often go to a celebrity or famous actor. But for this episode, we did not want that. And we knew from the beginning it should be Hank. And I remember Hank, after we had written it and while we were writing it, we talked to you about working out Frank's character as well.
Well, no, it's funny. You know, I don't remember it exactly that way. You know, one of the reasons I love this episode, besides the fact that I think it's so great, is that it's one of the few times that I did get to do the guest star part, where often I'll record parts like this and hoping that they'll retain what I do. And sometimes they do. Most often they don't. I always thought, interestingly, that this is one of the few times, though, that I thought it would have been better if somebody else did it. I was hoping you'd get William H. Macy to do it. Because when I read it, you know, it's interesting you say this everyman quality. To me, he's kind of the ultimate great foil everyman who you root for. And I based the character on William Macy. I can't really copy him vocally, but I tried to get as close as I could and copy his rhythms and the way he has that sort of seething, you know, passion underneath that total calm exterior.
I think that's... We wanted you because you're a master of frustration. Where I think, like, even William H. Macy, who's one of our favorite actors...
And we had him on the show.
And he's awesome. Hank, you just captured every man's frustration at the world in a way that I don't think anybody else can. And it's also... I think this role required a lot of knowledge about the show in a way, too, to sort of, like, how Frank deals with Homer.
Well, that's very true. Listen... I always think I'm better qualified to do these guest star parts. I want to do all of them. But, and it's, you know, something, this also was, I think, the one I worked the hardest on acting-wise. I think it's one we did the most takes on. It was the most emotional. It felt like the one I worked on the hardest from a performance point of view, in preparation and in execution.
Yeah, because I remember we talked to you a lot, and we don't always do that, where it's like I felt like we really worked it out to a T.
And that's you too, Hank, right?
That's me doing the silly,
Sold for a buck! There's probably been about 20 auction jokes in The Simpsons. I always like this one. There's not that many good auction jokes these days.
Sold for a buck after all that?
Yeah.
I like any chance to make silly noises like...
I remember there was we had a lot of discussion about what Frank Grimes should look like. And in fact, when we did the animatic of this episode, he was drawn as more or less a burly ex-Marine guy.
I remember
with
that.
With a crew cut. My special dietetic lunch.
Huh? Oh, and you know what? Didn't we talk about this? I think he's based, the design is based a bit on Michael Douglas in Falling Down, which was out around this time and was sort of a similar guy who had was fed up with the world.
A little bit, and also a little bit of a college roommate of mine.
Wow. Was your college roommate like Frank?
A little bit. Not to that extent.
I love that sort of perfectly rendered chewed gnawed pencils.
Do you know who chewed my...
Now, what kind of feedback have you gotten on this episode?
Okay,
you say it's very controversial.
Yeah,
what was the
negative feedback you
this
got
was,
at first?
This was, there were, I would say there were three controversial episodes that we did. One was The Two Bad Neighbors of George Bush. One was The Principal and the Pauper, which we'll talk about then. And this one, and because when this came out, I really recall that it made half the audience very mad, where... It doesn't have a lot of jokey jokes. It's all very observational about character and stuff, and I think people didn't get it. And I remember that people didn't like it because we got one email from a guy who loved it, a guy in the Army. And if he's out there, God bless you, he really liked it then. But the interesting thing is now, we've talked about the generational shift in Simpsons fans. I think the people who grew up with The Simpsons and were kids when this was on, and it's sort of like, grown up with it, they really love it. And this episode, I'm not kidding, is among many of those people's top 10 episodes. I know certainly on nohomers.com, it's like, it's universally talked about as a all-time favorite.
Would you say, it's true, we're getting into I don't know, we're getting into weird territory here, but it seems to me, I don't pay too much attention to what people say on the internet, but and maybe this is unfair, but it seems like whatever episode is on, whatever season we're in, the commentary is very critical. A lot of people love the show, obviously, but the diehard people who tend to get online about this stuff are very critical of the episodes in the present season and always say it wasn't like it was 5 years ago. But then 5 years from now, they'll say the same thing.
That's, that is true, because when we were doing, like, this episode...
Well, it's because the show's getting worse.
But people would say all these episodes were the worst episodes ever, but now they go, I was...
Well, I have a theory about this, by the way, and I think I've told you this before, but I believe that what people do is, in their memories, they're remembering their all-time favorite moments, whatever those moments might be, from the past, and they're always measuring up the most... new thing from the thing that they saw the very first time, which really made them happy. So one problem with doing a show as long as we've done is we're fighting the fact that people are familiar with the show, and it's harder and harder to surprise the audience.
Right. So, what's interesting is I think now, after being on so long, people want to see something exciting and new or weird. But I think back then, I mean, it still had already been on 8 seasons, but something new like this seemed too odd to them.
Was this so new at the time? I guess it is kind of it's a two-hander almost, which is very rare for The Simpsons.
Laughing, you imbecile!
Is that what bugged people, that it was like this weird, like, little sort of pinch
of
play between these two guys?
Partly that it was Homer was really mean to him.
Yeah, I think it's really just, it's undiluted Homer without unleavened by sympathy or
But to me, it's like Homer, what's weird to me is I've heard people say that, and it's said on the internet. To me, Homer seems like a thoughtful guy in this, that he's sort of he's trying to be nice to Frank, but he can't help it.
Yeah, to me it's also, I mean, not to get too deep, but there's something very zen about this episode. You know, it's Homer's blind happiness, his ignorant bliss, that just gets him through, you know? And it's a nice lesson, you know, Grimes works so, he's so type A, he works so hard, he's so uptight, and you can't enjoy life if you're like that, whereas Homer is hapless, but, you know, thrilled.
I think, that's a good point. I think you might have hit on one reason why some people didn't like it, is because it brings in the real world, where it reminds you that it's not all like Homer, except I think the lesson to take from it is, be more like Homer,
Beloved man in Springfield.
Yeah.
It's a weird world, Homer. As hard as it is to believe.
Hey, Moe's voice is a little different. You hear that?
No, I won't accept
He was a little higher back then. He was up here, and now I put him...
Did Moe come from anything in particular?
Moe was originally based on Al Pacino.
Oh,
wow.
When I first saw... I think that was the first voice I read for you, Matt. I was doing a play at the time in Hollywood where I was playing a drug dealer, which I sort of based on Pacino from Dog Day Afternoon.
Huh.
Kind of up here like this, you know, what's going on here? And I did that, and you guys just went, well, we want the voice to be gravelly. So when I went up here and made it gravelly, it was like this. But then I was really up high, you know. It was more like this, you know. And then over the years, just I think because it's easier, and also because I don't know, it's just sort of settled into being a little more down here. But a lot of the voices have evolved like that. Like, you know, of course, Homer was almost a pure Walter Matthau impression at first, and then it turned into what it is now.
Right, and Wiggum, was he sort of Edward G. Robinson?
You know, he sounds like Edward G. Robinson, but you know, when I very first did it, I had David Brinkley in my mind, believe it or not. I kind of did it like this, and sort of went like that. And you guys, basically it was a pace note. You guys, you know, it's too slow, and so I kind of sped it up, and it kind of got here. And then it just kind of became Edward G. Robinson, see?
That's cool.
So if you speed up David Brinkley, he becomes Edward G. Robinson.
Now, this is one of my favorite all-time episode, one of my favorite scenes.
Hi. See? And my son, Bart, he owns
it. We did a lot of takes on this. This is what I'm saying, the acting came in.
I'm late for my night job at the foundry, so if you don't mind telling me.
Good heavens!
Now, this also, this episode's a magic combination of Hank's amazing acting, the amazing animation, and Swartzwelder's amazing script. And this scene is particularly full of Swartzwelder. This joke here.
I love that joke.
It almost makes me faint. It's such a good joke. Yes, now I think that, Jim, you were saying, like, this probably made people angry that we're pointing out the silliness of things Homer has done. But to me, it's in the whole reality of a show, it makes sense.
Right, well, it's just here, it's being confronted with a real person.
I've had to work hard every day of my life. And what do I have to show for it? This briefcase and this haircut.
I love that, and the reading is so perfect.
Sloth and ignorance.
What?
Well, right there.
House, two cars, a beautiful wife, a son who owns a factory, fancy clothes, and lobsters for dinner. And do you deserve any of it? No!
What are you saying?
I'm saying you're what's wrong with America, Simpson. You coast through life, you do as little as possible, and you leech off decent, hard-working people, like me. If you lived in any other country in the world, you'd have starved to death long ago.
He's got you there, Dad.
You're a fraud. A total fraud. It was nice meeting you.
Oh, Hank, that was wonderful.
Yeah, we worked very hard on that. You know, it's also, see, another level the show works on, that's also an indictment of the conventions of sitcoms. You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's like, how do these people who have no money live in such nice sets that get built for them? And have all the things that they have. That's another reason. Which, you know, on the one level, it's frivolous. On another level, you know, a lot of people, I think, spend a lot of their lives trying to catch up to how they think, you know, people live on Friends or people live on wherever they live. And
you should just aim low and live like Homer lives.
Well, it's just not reality is the point, which Frank Grimes is pointing out.
I think that's a point, too, is people like to watch TV to escape from reality, and when someone like Frank Grimes comes and waves reality in your face, you can either step back and love it or go,
yeah. Yeah, it's very polarizing. So,
which is interesting, because that's what's happening. Well, we're getting very deep, but that's what's happening in TV these days, isn't it? You got all these reality shows, which I know aren't really reality, but they're closer anyway than, you know, an episode of Canon, say. And or you have this very heightened, crazy stuff like Lost or even 24. It's very rare that a show tries to be realistic. On cable, they get to, but...
Right. But that's one thing, too, but that's always stuck. The Simpsons is more real, and people always say this, it sounds hacky, but The Simpsons is more real than a lot of sitcoms. And that's one reason why I always liked it, is because it's so... Even if it's crazy, there's a lot more real emotion in this show.
Me being lazy... About him being a crazy.
So, where do you think Huff fits in there?
Well, to me, Huff is a thank you for the plug. Huff, why I love doing it is because we do it on cable, which is a place where you can tell the truth. You can be very, very intimate. You can be very, very realistic. it's like shooting independent film, you know. To me, you know, cable TV is to it's a television what independent film is to the movie business. You know, you can tell intimate little stories and go where you want to go without too much restriction.
Oh, I just want to mention...
I love Huff, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I can't wait. I don't. You guys really painted yourself into a corner at the end of the first season. I
want where do you see the second season? We really... I mean, I think we actually outdid the first season. I'm pretty sure we did.
Can you believe that guy? He's in his office making a pathetic attempt to look professional.
Hey, what do you got against Huff?
Now, I like this too, if you'll notice, because we put the men's room there. It's going to come back later. It's foreshadowed what's going to happen.
Well, there were some really good board guys on this particular episode. Jeff Lynch, who has done storyboards and second unit on Spider-Man, and Ted Mathod, who was a board artist on The Incredibles. So we're very lucky to have them on this episode.
And I want everyone in this plant to realize it. I would die a happy man if I could prove to you...
So, Hank, where did Carl come from?
Carl, what the hell is Carl? You know, that's just a voice that I always did. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of a fun guy. And it's just a silly voice I always did. And was always, you know, the great things about The Simpsons for me is I literally had all these voices in my head. It gave me a place to put them all. Many years ago, I've tapped out. I'm sure if you notice, I have no new voices. That's it. I think I have one new one, the homeless guy, the hobo, right? This guy. Guy with the dog. Sort of new, but other than that. But, you know, the funny thing was, Carl, remember the first year, Smitty and Carl, we never knew who was Lenny and who was Carl. They just kind of switched up a few times before we figured it out.
Yeah, this show was not well planned. Sort of made up as we went along.
Now, I love Dan's working in a basement here. It's hilarious. He just did it one take, and I think we had to cut it. There was like 5 minutes of Dan hurting himself.
Some kind of model for a contest. He says it's really high-tech stuff that we wouldn't understand.
Marge, do we have any elbow macaroni and glue-on sparkles?
Now, this story, the factory story, was one that had been kicking around for a long time. It says, Bart buys a factory. And I think we milked it for as much as we can, which is about 40 seconds total. But we had fun in the factory.
I'd like to be night watchman, but I'm sleepy.
But it's also, we wanted to cut the episode and have a Bart or Lisa's kid story to contrast with the heaviness and reality of Fred Grimes.
I have a friend who's a night watchman. You know what the secret of a night watchman is? They sleep.
Everybody I know who's ever worked on a security job sleeps. That's like the number one perk.
Aw, jeez. Milhouse, how could you let this happen? You were supposed to be the night watchman.
I was watching. I saw the whole thing. First it started falling over, then it fell over.
Wow. I wonder where all the rats are going to go.
I love this gag.
Okay, everybody tuck your pants into your socks.
Because that makes sense. That's what you do if you're in a mouse-like environment surrounded by rats. It seems like a good lesson. Now, with those rats, is that... That's a hard thing to draw as fast as a rat.
No, it's not that bad, really.
Really?
No.
It looks hard.
I also like how it seemed like Mo has dealt with that before.
Right.
Yeah, Benny, all right, don't panic. Tuck your pants into your socks. We'll get through this thing.
Oh, now this line coming up from Wiggum.
Ralphie, get off the stage, sweetheart.
I love, because again, it's so realistic, and that line has been quoted. Do you know about the song Ralph Wiggum? By the Bloodhound Gang.
Yes. No.
There's this group that's really good. They're really funny, and they did a whole song called Ralph Wiggum that is just lines from Ralph Wiggum from the show, but the chorus is Get Ralphie, Get Off the Stage, Sweetheart.
Is that right?
Yeah, the Bloodhound Gang. They're good.
I think I actually threw in the Sweetheart, if I remember correctly. And that's the line I remember most from Wiggum, actually. If somebody asks me to think of a line from him, I think of that line.
The Sweetheart makes it perfect because it's so loving and sweet.
Well, basically, I just copied the plant we have now.
This really builds the outrage so well.
To lower wind resistance. And this racing stripe here, I feel, is pretty sharp.
Rio, this episode has more lines that Bill and I end up quoting from in real life, just with when things go wrong or whatever. And one of them, the racing stripe, which I feel is pretty nice, is when we've done something that we know isn't great, but it's just pretty nice when we quote the racing stripe line.
Insane, I tell you! I can be lazy, too! Look at me! I'm a worthless employee, just like Homer Simpson. Give me a promotion.
Great animation there.
I love, too, that people are also sort of shocked and sort of quietly upset, like just as you would be if you witnessed someone going crazy.
On the seat. Give me a raise. Now I'm returning to work without washing my hands. But it doesn't matter, because I'm...
There's a little bit of Laurel and Hardy in this, too, where they're just watching one guy go crazy and passively standing by.
Do.
This, it's my all-time favorite freakout in any media.
You wish.
Hi, Mr. Burns. I'm the worst worker in the world. Time to go.
Mark Irvin, our assistant director, and Paul Wee, our top layout guy, gave him all these scenes.
It's wonderful acting
just
on him.
Went to town. It was amazing.
Look, people know, but they can't stop him because they're so shocked and upset.
Well, plus he does die.
Good smash cut.
The other thing about that is, for performance-wise, having Bill Macy in my mind as someone who so can't let loose like that, that his version of it is so, even that is sort of repressed. He's kind of trying to go crazy.
That's right. He doesn't know exactly how to go crazy or want to let himself do it. But
it was a very repressed freak out. That's what led to that going, blah, blah. Like he just doesn't know how to scream, really, even.
That's the best last shot I ever had on a show I did. I can top that.
Is the coffin being lowered and people cracking up?
Yeah.
That's, you know, even my kids who are just 6 years old, that's their favorite thing. And they love this. I don't know what's going to happen to them when they're
older.
And
we keep on bringing references to Grimy back, you know, throughout the... And
I
also the
Grimy.
Son of Frank Grimy.
That's
coming
right.
Up. Wait, was his son?
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, it's a couple of years down the road.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
It's a shame because we killed off an amazing character in one episode, but he was wonderful.
That's another great thing about it, though, is it's really just like not... It just goes out there and then disappears. It doesn't try to franchise itself or anything.
That's right.
You can't spin him off?
Well, the figurine, though, sells great.